Policymakers and historians, political leaders and professional worriers love to talk about the rise of China, the belligerence of Russia, and the diminishing influence of the United States in the world. As the global economy feels the shockwaves of China's emergence and Europe's troubles, U.S. debt, and Russia's oil wealth and power under Vladimir Putin, who's looking more and more like a traditional dictator these days, where can we see the political forces at play between China, Russia, and the U.S.? Well, the old tripolar Cold War rivals are at it again. The proxy backgrounds are not Korea, Vietnam, or the Middle East, but instead Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. The nations of Central Asia, the old lands of the great game of more than a century ago. Still great, it's just an all-new game.
Today's great game is something completely different. The great game today is a cauldron of intersecting local, regional, and international actors, some of whom are states, some of whom are not, all of whom have important or even vital interest in what's going on in this area, Central Asia.
That was Stephen Blank, a professor at the Army War College, expounding on the importance of Central Asia to the U.S., to Russia, and to China. A new book, Great Game, Local Rules, explores the importance of Central Asia in some depth for our time. Joining us in the studio today is author Alexander Cooley. He's a political science professor at Barnard College right here in New York City. Alexander, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, John.
So what's the headline story, and you begin it in this book, that really hints at what is going on right now in Central Asia? It involves a base in Kyrgyzstan that made it into the headlines some years ago and is actually still making news.
Right. So the new great game is actually an interaction between three external powers, the United States, Russia, and China, over the last 10 years. But unlike the old great game, where this was a struggle for geopolitical competition, zero sum, in the new great game, the actors want different things. So for the U.S., Central Asia is a sort of staging area for Afghanistan. It's a place for bases, for fuel contracts, for supply chains. For Russia, it's a place to project its prestige, to emphasize that it's a great power. And for China, it's a neighborhood that needs to be secured to make sure that Xinjiang in its west is secure. So sometimes these interests coincide. Sometimes there's begrudging enabling of each other. Sometimes there's outright competition. So in the Kyrgyz case, Moscow felt as if the base in U.S. base at Manas in Kyrgyzstan was being used to project U.S. influence through the region. So it attempted to buy off the Kyrgyz government. Of course, for the U.S., it's vital. All troops being staged through Afghanistan go through it. But the real story of the new great game is not even these three external powers. It's the small Central Asian states that have savvily begun to manipulate, play these great powers off one another.
And they're pretty darn good at it. Let's get a thumbnail sketch of the different interests of these countries. Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. How are they different? How are they alike?
Right. So Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan are the two energy producers.
Right. Right.
But they're very different. Kazakhstan is a much more modern power. It's been led by President Nazarbayev, who has tried to craft this image of a multi-vector foreign policy, trying to have good relations with all poles. Turkmenistan, very different. A natural gas producer, but very secluded, very isolated. For the first 15 years of independence, it was somewhat of a North Korea-type pariah closed state. Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, smaller, poorer, borders with China, also very reliant on external flows and aid, as well as migrant remittances from workers in Russia.
So they need bases. They need explicit building and aid from places like the United States.
They need whatever they can get. The name of the game there is to try and play these external actors for your personal benefit. So, for example, in the Kyrgyz case, President Bakiyev drummed up this bidding war between Russia and the United States to both enable his personal reelection, and now we know he stashed a lot of these revenues in offshore bank accounts.
And what about Uzbekistan?
Uzbekistan is the central hub in Central Asia, both historically and in the modern great game. And you see a real back and forth over Uzbekistan's orientation. Just a few weeks ago, Uzbekistan exited the Russian-led CSTO, which is a security organization led by Moscow, amid speculation that it would cooperate more closely with NATO and the U.S. And, of course, all of the northern transit routes outside of Afghanistan go through Uzbekistan. So in some ways, Uzbekistan really is the linchpin here.
We're talking to the author of Great Game, Local Rules, which is a book exploring the importance of Central Asia in the 21st century. Alexander Cooley is the author. He's right here in the studio with us. So, you know, what's interesting about this book, and blow by blow, you get the case that's made that the presence of these three powers, the U.S., China, and Russia, in Central Asia actually empowers these individual nations to play the superpowers off against each other. And they have far more influence than they would have had just dealing with China, just dealing with Russia, or just dealing with the United States.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the countries themselves understand that they're objects of competition. So even in cases where there isn't actually much competition, they like to invoke it. They like to invoke the interest of Russian oil companies when dealing with the Chinese. They like to invoke the interest of Russian security services when they deal with Americans. So in some ways, I consider Central Asia also a laboratory for what some would call the post-Western world, a post-American world, a multipolar world. This is really a real-life example of what multiple emerging powers, how they compete and how they interact in this limited arena.
That post-Western world is going to look a lot like dictatorships with elites in the country and the use of domestic energy resources to simply enrich whoever's in power.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the trends I talk about in the book over the last 10 years has been the decline of democracy and human rights, but I think in some novel ways. So, for instance, you've seen this attempt to code civil society and NGOs as agents of foreign influence. And the exact same legislation, registration restrictions you're seeing in places like Egypt now, or places like Ethiopia. You've also seen this talk of double standards, right? That the West isn't really serious about human rights and democracy. Look at Guantanamo, look at Abu Ghraib, and Central Asian leaders make a big deal of this. Islam Karimov has insisted with the EU that they talk about human rights violations in the EU as well as human rights violations in Uzbekistan.
Talking with political science professor at Barnard College, Alexander Cooley, the author of Great Games, Local Rules, about the competition in Central Asia between China, the Soviet Union, China, Russia, and the United States. You know, it seems to me, based on what you've written here in your reporting and analysis, that the U.S. is at a distinct disadvantage to China. While Russia attempts to evoke the old Cold War era of its old republics as trying to have influence, China is doing direct investment in these countries, whereby the U.S. military investment in bases and things creates domestic political issues that actually encourages the leaders to cast the U.S. as a foreign intervener, as someone trying to take over. So these bases, while they provide a lot of enrichment to the local leaders, are also a political liability for the United States. China's competing pretty favorably.
Yeah, absolutely. So the bases themselves have become symbols, especially the Manas base in Kyrgyzstan, of the corrupting influence of the U.S., questions about the fuel contracts, where they're going, connecting ruling elites. And you've had two revolutions in Kyrgyzstan, and the corruption issue was big in both cases. China's very interesting because what you see China doing is tailoring their economic engagements in ways that cuts across traditional Western categories. So we tend to think of foreign aid, emergency assistance, investment as being these distinct types of economic engagement, financial assistance. But the Chinese bundle these. So, for instance, with the Kazakhs and the Turkmens, they gave them large loans, $5 billion and $10 billion, in exchange for equity in energy companies or promises of energy. The Kyrgyz and the Tajiks, the Chinese build roads, infrastructures, energy transmission grids. So they really supply what they perceive is needed in these different countries, and they don't really make a big deal about whether it's development or investment. They really see this as an investment in the future of these places.
So Chinese tangible missions to develop an infrastructure that's going to deliver them energy is basically a question kind of open-ended to these nations. What do you need? This is what we need.
Exactly.
What do you need? Whereas the U.S., it's more abstract. It's a kind of geopolitical, help us out in Afghanistan, we're going to put a base here. And that ultimately becomes a political liability.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the U.S., what you've seen in Central Asia over the last 10 years is the instrumentalization of a Central Asian policy for the service of Afghanistan, where even in cases where it's making large economic transfers, they're being done more in terms of tacit quid pro quo or giving transit fees to Central Asian companies ruled by Central Asian elites to try and facilitate this transit and
so
the security cooperation.
They see it's not about us. It's about your mission in Afghanistan. Focus a little more on us and maybe we would give you more attention. Is China going to win this game based on the way it's playing out right now?
I think China's already winning, much to the lament of Russia, that this used to be Russia's backyard. And now what you've seen is China redraw the fences, that its overwhelming economic power, especially since the financial crisis, is really leading it to create all of these links between Central Asia and its east in energy and infrastructure that weren't there before.
Author of the new book, Great Game, Local Rules, about China, the U.S., and Russia in Central Asia. He's a professor of political science at Barnard College. Alexander Cooley, thanks so much.
My pleasure.